Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in, everybody. This is your host, Christopher Rennie, bringing you another episode of the Instant Recap Podcast from Land Grant Holy Land. I am here today joined by Justin Golba. For the first time, we have a basketball expert on this show. Justin, introduce yourself. Welcome, everybody. Here we go.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris. Super excited to talk about this last game we just watched because it was a fun one.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the Carmen's Crew game against the Men of Mackey. This is old foes going up against each other once again. Carmen's Crew was able to knock off the Men of Mackey 80-69. After a slow start, they really got the ball going shooting. The lid got lifted off the basket in the second half, and they ended up outscoring the Men of Mackey quite a bit. So overall, how'd you feel about the performance today? I just kind of want to get your opinion on it. The first half shooting struggles kind of were overcome. So how do you feel the Carmen's Crew played today?
Yeah, it was nice because, you know, they struggled on offense, as you said, in the first half, but they were able to make up for that on the defensive end and hold Men and Mackey to where they couldn't get out to any 5 or 10 point leads. Because you knew the lid was going to come off at some point. These guys can just—they're just very good shooters. So once that happened, they pulled away, and Men and Mackey just—it seemed like they never got into any type of groove. Kelsey Barlow didn't score till late in the third quarter. Isaac Haas just wasn't really a dominant factor. He was getting bullied by 6'2" Jeff Gibbs. I'm 6'2", you know. So it was fun to watch, honestly.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting for sure because I know coming into the game, one of mine and Jordan's worries last week Friday, I guess, that was not that long ago, was the size that the Men of Mackey was bringing with Haas, with Hummel, with a few of their bench guys, you know. And then we got the surprise information right before the game started that I believe A.J. Hammond was playing today, and he's another big that they threw at us. So overall, I thought Ohio State did a really good job on the defensive end, kind of stifling those bigs, kind of getting out in transition, kind of keeping the mismatches going throughout the game. And I kind of think once the lid got lifted off the basket, they did a really good job of using our bigs to in the pick and roll to create space for our guys and getting them out on islands. And they took advantage of it.
Yeah, you could say maybe they got a little bit lucky because A.J. Hammonds ended up not playing. You know, they said he was a little bit tight during warm-up, so he didn't go. But, you know, I honestly don't think he would have made a huge difference. I mean, Jeff Gibbs looks like he's 7 foot down there. Julian Mavunga has been an awesome addition for them. And, you know, Kostakoufos is just doing what we've seen him do his whole career. So honestly, I don't think he would have made a huge difference. I think the only thing it would have maybe Isaac Hodge looked a little bit dead at the end of the game. I think maybe he would have had some fresher legs. But other than that, I think they just did a phenomenal job of, you know, we talked on the Bucketheads podcast. We talked to Joey Lane, me and Connor Lamont talked to Joey Lane, who is very involved in the TBT with Inside the TBT. And we asked him that exact question. What does he think Ohio State could do or Carmen's crew could do against those big guys? And he was like, look, at the end of the day, they're big, and that's going to affect them on the offensive end, but they have to guard on defense. You know, and Jeff Gibbs and Mavunga and Kufis, they're just more athletic than Haas or Hammonds or whoever else. Hummel doesn't look – he looks like he's 34 out there, honestly. You know, it was very nice to see them, you know, take advantage of where you can take advantage. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, honestly, for me, I think the Jeff Gibbs run at the half was kind of the difference in the first half for sure. Overall, I think you're right, though. I think the bigs on Men of Mackey kind of looked tired. They looked fresh. I remember Hummel took a three in transition and you just saw that ball end up about a foot short. Because they were tired. They were getting work. They had to go out and cover space. The Carmen's crew made a lot of extra passes to keep them moving, and they did a great job of tiring out the legs. And I think you saw them take advantage of that later in the game, especially with the guards and the pick and roll. And I think Carmen's crew, this is what I've noticed the first two games, is they're not going to dominate you in the first half. They're going to figure out what's working and they're going to make the adjustments and they're going to stick with the hot hand. And that was William Buford in the second half. In the first half, it was Mavunga and Gibbs, and they really just rode those guys to that point. Evan Ravenel had a big game as well. So our bigs really outplayed the Men of Mackey bigs, and I think that's something to be excited about moving forward in the tournament.
Yeah, and it's something Carmen's crew has done their entire time in this tournament, even when they were Scarlet and Gray, is they just are deep. They're so deep. They can go to anybody. Keyshawn Woods is their last guy off the bench, and he had a great game. Phenomenal game, honestly. So yeah. It's so nice to see they can just – there was a time where I don't think David Leidy played for 6 or 7 minutes. He was getting that much of a rest. And when you can have those guys just cycling in and out, and that's what Dan Dockage brought up against Mid-American Unity, was you could tell – during that second half, Mid-American Unity was getting towards the end of their bench and they were kind of struggling with guys. While Carmen's crew, they were cycling guys in and out and no one ever looked tired. And say, I mean, Aaron Kraft, he's barely playing 15 to 20 minutes. So he's staying fresh because we don't know what his legs are like. So it's Shannon Scott's been just an awesome addition for him just to give Aaron Kraft some time to just chill.
Yeah, Shannon Scott was actually – he didn't shoot the ball very well, but he impacted the game in a lot of ways. Played really good defense on their guards, and that was something exciting to see from him. I mean, you could see the impact the guards on the defensive end made because you look at Gaines on Men of Mackey, 1 for 9 shooting. Jackson the 4, 3 of 6 shooting. Overall, James off the bench, 2 of 9 shooting. They could not get anything going with their guards scoring the ball. Boudreaux, 0 for 2. And it just showed because this is what I said on the last Instant Recap pod. You could see the Thad Mata fingerprints all over this team. It all starts on the defensive end. And the defensive intensity of Carmen's crew is so commendable for a tournament like this where you think it'd be a very offensive-oriented tournament. And they just put so much effort on that side of the ball that it creates such easy offense for them on that side.
Yeah, and they just – it's like you said, especially early on in this game, like we kind of mentioned earlier, when they're struggling to hit shots, you know, everything was coming up a little short. Maybe they just didn't quite, you know, going from a Friday night game to a Sunday afternoon game. This is a lot of energy spent. These are older guys. So, you know, maybe they were just didn't have the legs under them right away. But as you said, they were doing such a good job. This Men of Mackey team didn't score. And they could have came out and they could have gone out to some 10, 15 point lead at the half. And then it's a whole different ball game. But they were able to stifle them, slow them down. Like I said, I mean, Kelsey Barlow finished with 18, but he was 5 for 16. I'll take that any day of the week. You know, so they look fantastic.
Yeah, and I think one thing, I think they were shooting around 25% at halftime. So that just is a testament to how that game, that changed the game. Because like you said, it could have gotten out of hand. Ohio State's alumni team was not shooting the ball well. And overall, I think the great effort defensively altered this game. And they played great defense from the first quarter until the end of the game, till the final whistle. So that's something that sticks with you. You know, you're not going to make every shot. You're not always going to be on hot streak shooting the ball. So that's one thing you could always bring and expect from Carmen's crew is high defensive energy.
Yeah, and it was even during the Elam ending, they kind of they missed a couple good looks. And I know when Keyshawn Woods missed that corner three, you could see – I saw Sully kind of put his hands up and he was like, oh, my God. But even then, Menemaki never made a run because they couldn't – Dan Dockage mentioned it. They were getting the stops, but they couldn't get a bucket. So it was –
yeah.
You know, I thought this game would be a lot closer. I wrote the preview for it. I thought it would be 80-76. I got the 80 part right, but they really pulled away from Menemaki, especially when that kind of John Diebler, William Buford kind of mini run happened in the third quarter. It just seemed like they were just the better team.
Yeah, when Diebler hit, I believe, what, it was two threes by him. And then William Buford was just kind of the offense in the second half. Everything kind of ran through him, and if he wasn't scoring, he was kind of getting everything set up for everybody else. And we can move forward with this. We can get into some of the key players, I guess. Who, in your eyes, really stood out to you in this game?
I think you kind of said earlier, to me, everybody – played pretty well, but for me it was Shannon Scott and Lenzel Smith. I think what they were able to do on the defensive end, Lenzel Smith, he is showing, he just looks so, honestly, it looks kind of like happy to be there, kind of, because he's just putting in so much energy.
Yeah.
And so much, and I'm pretty sure he played the past 2 years on the team, but he's putting in so much energy. He knows his role. He's not sitting here taking 30-foot jumpers. He knows his role. He's playing great defense. He's hustling. And it's kind of same with Shannon Scott. You mentioned he's struggling a little bit shooting the ball. But when Lighty's on, when Buford's on, when Diebler's on, I guess when Mavunga's on now, you don't really need Shannon Scott to get you 20 points. His stat line the first game was 6-6-3. Today, I believe he had 4-5-4. Those stat lines will be fine. They don't need him to have 20 points. Yeah. The 5-5-5, that's fantastic. He had no turnovers, which is awesome. So that's the big thing for me.
Yeah, the nice little triple singles from him. Keyshawn Woods was a 2-2-2 guy, but like they're impacting the game in more ways than just scoring. And that's something that you could also say is a testament of this team, is these guys know their role. They know exactly what they're good at. They've all played together at some point, whether it's in the tournament or at Ohio State. And I think that highlights exactly what makes this team great and why they are contenders routinely in this tournament. I think I have to give a lot of credit here to Evan Rabinow. I think he's a key player for me here. The question of them facing the bigs, he went 4-5 shooting, stepped out, hit some mid-range jumpers, hit a three. It was a huge three, and I think one of the key moments of the game that kind of got the wheels turning for the offense to close it out. And then he just was able to alter the shots of these guys enough. He was able to be a big defensive guy on the low block that made these Purdue bigs work a lot. And you could see that effort really translate to how the bigs on Menemaki were able to come up short during this game, I guess would be a medium way to put it. But I think overall this team had a really solid effort from the first guy on the roster to the last man on the roster. I think we both would love to shout out this guy. I think we're all – just falling in love once again every year in the summer. Everyone who sees Jeff Gibbs can't but help but root for him. He's a 6'2 power forward, and I think his time closing out the half was one of the biggest moments of the game.
Yeah, I think the only person that might disagree with you there is Robbie Hummel about loving him, but because Robbie Hummel's going to need a nice bath after today. I mean, he's probably thinking, like, I don't even know why I decided to do this tournament, because he's been on the call the past couple of years. I think he's safer behind the booth, because Jeff Gibbs was just absolutely manhandling him down low. And it's insane to watch. He defies all laws of basketball. He's 6'2", but he's an absolute bowling ball. And he just – I mean, there was a time where I think maybe Dan Dockage even mentioned it. He got a hand on one of Isaac Haas' shots. It's like, how in the world do you even get up there? You know, there's 7-footers that can't get up there with Isaac Haas. So it's just the effort he puts in is just unbelievable. And it's just it's one of those things where it just spreads to the rest of the team. He's the old guy. He's the old head. You know, he's always going to be productive. I can't think of a game where he hurt the team negatively because he's not doing anything that he knows he can't do. He's 40 years old at this point. He knows what he can do, you know, so he's never going to step out. And, you know, he made that, I guess it was a 2 at the end of the half now, but it looked like a 3. But he's not going to take those, you know, he's not going to take 7 of those a game and go 1-for-7 and completely, you know, he's going to take the shots he knows he can get. He's going to get down low. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to absolutely make you work for every single thing you get. And that's kind of back to our conversation about just them out-depthing guys. They have more depth. And when you're down low, even as good as Isaac Haas is, when you're fighting against Jeff Gibbs and you're fighting against Evan Ravenel, it makes it hard.
Yeah, and the thing about Jeff Gibbs is he had a few shots against Robbie Hummel, against Haas, that I just hadn't no idea how he was able to get them off so cleanly. And he's such a good shot creator on the low block that you really can't teach some of the stuff he's doing. And he's got unbelievable touch around the rim. He's a good free throw shooter. He just does every little thing a big guy has to do to score so well. And as a 6'2 person, he obviously has to be extremely fundamentally sound on that stuff. But it's just, it looks effortless how he's able to move these guys around. He's able to anchor in on the defensive end. He's not just only doing it offensively and creating these weird shots, these baby hooks that he does, but Robbie Hummel couldn't move him. It was unbelievable to watch.
Yeah, and I know Sully mentioned when he was his press conference last game, he said this about Aaron Kraft, but it's the same with Jeff Gibbs. He called his hustle and energy just genetic. That's what it is. You can't teach what Kraft and Gibbs do. It's just in their blood. And like you said, I mean, Robbie Hummel, should, by all accounts, should have had his way with Jeff Gibbs. He should have had – he had 17 points, but it was a hard 17. And, I mean, he went on kind of a 10-little-point stretch of just shooting himself that really Jeff – I don't believe Jeff Gibbs was even in the game. So, you know, I would like to see how many of those points he had against Jeff Gibbs because it was a hard-fought 17. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and overall, I think the contagious energy he provides, what the team gets so excited when Jeff Gibbs does anything, and that stuff you just – that's why you need a guy like Jeff Gibbs on the team. You need the old heads who get buckets because it gets the young guys more engaged, more involved, and it makes everybody excited.
Yeah, and, you know, there was definitely the question of whether Jeff Gibbs or Aaron Kraft were going to play this year. And I think this team would be a lot different if those two both didn't play just because not only, I mean, they're obviously bringing, you know, they're good players, but what they bring just in terms of hustle and kind of inspiration for the rest of the team, it can't really be, that can't be replaced.
Yeah. Overall, the team they just played such a good game. I think you really can't complain. 48% shooting, 38% from three. The only place you might be able to pick apart is the 67% from the free throw line. They didn't capitalize too much off turnovers, but they rebounded well. It was just a really good game, beginning to end for them outside shooting in the first half. And I think this is a game they could build on. The first game, it kind of felt like they were getting their legs wet. This is a game they could legitimately build on and move on in the tournament.
Yeah, I think the difference between – I felt kind of after the first game they survived a little bit. Like Mid-American Unity was always right there. They were just a couple baskets away from taking leads. This game they won. They were winning the entire time. They looked better than Mid-American – than Menomaki, whereas Mid-American Unity a little bit. I was like, all right, they beat the 16 seed, thank God, because they looked a little shaky at times, the 10 turnovers in the first half, obviously, but that none of that was a concern. I agree with you on the free throws. They need to clean that up because it's just kind of a weird thing for a team that this good of shooters, just a bad free throw shooting team, but I think that might be a once-off. Who knows?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey,
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I think with you being a local basketball expert here at Land Grant Holy Land, I think you might be able to help me get some more information on why any Ohio State-related team struggles in the first round of tournaments. But I just think it's good. You survive, you advance, and then you start playing basketball the way you're supposed to. And that's kind of what we saw with Carmen's crew tonight.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot better than the 2 versus 15. I won't even mention the names, but
we all know what I'm talking about. I just love to bring it up because it just hurts. Yeah, and then so next thing on the list, we had a huge upset in the tournament today. I think a lot of Carmen's crew fans were really looking forward for some redemption later in the bracket against the Red Scare. They fell to Category 5. How, as a spectator and fan of TBT, did that really raise your eyebrows here?
That was huge. That was the second biggest upset of the tournament. You could argue maybe the biggest, but with House of Pain, I really thought House of Pain was going to be a lot better. So them losing yesterday was big. But Category 5, you know, not a lot known about them. They're a Miami alumni team, obviously, but they never played before. So, you know, I mean, I guess this stat will make Ohio State fans feel nice. Jordan Seibert was 2-for-11. So maybe if he played for Perman's crew, he would have done better. But who knows? You know, it was just – it's kind of – Daryl Davis had 30 points for Red Scare. If it wasn't for that, they probably would have been blown out. Devin Oliver only shot 4 times. I really don't know why. He needs to be – should have been more aggressive. But, you know, I watched that game. It just – Category 5 just – I hate to say they looked like they wanted it more because when $1 million on the line, I hate that. I think that's very overused. All these teams want it. It's $1 million. You know, they're all going to play hard. Dan Dockage loves to say, ooh, this team's playing hard. Like, of course they are. It's $1 million. I would play very hard for $1 million. But Category 5 did just look a little bit better. I think Red Scare might have been looking a little bit ahead because their next game would be a very tough one against either Blue Collar U or Zip 'em Up. And I think they just got caught looking ahead a little bit, and Category 5 caught them.
Yeah, and, you know, those two games are happening tonight. The game, the next matchup for Carmen's crew is currently on while we're recording, so we're not going to have the full information on that. But looking at the tournament, I know you and Connor are huge fans of this. The money team, obviously that's related to Floyd Mayweather, and they're back with vengeance in TBT 2021, according to the website, is taking on Team Hines. If you could give us a little context on these two teams and what Carmen's crew should be looking forward to, or not looking forward to, I guess, would be a better way to put it, with their next matchup.
Yeah, so the money team, they're a very kind of spread out team. You're not going to get a star on that team. Probably, if you had to point to one, Jordan Crawford is their star. But, you know, Draw Jones is a Ball State alum. He had 24 points in their first game against the region. You know, Taylor Smith had 10 points. You got Charles Jenkins at 15. They just kind of spread the ball out. They're not a fantastic shooting team, but they were 13 for 15 from the free throw line, so they took advantage of that. Only had 9 turnovers, so they're a very fundamental team. They're a team that Carmen's crew is going to have to play a very similar game to today to beat them, because they will make you – they will capitalize on your mistakes. So they kind of got lucky against Mid-American Unity where they didn't do that, but this team is one. And then Team Hines is kind of a TBT staple. If you watch the TBT at all, you know who they are. Kyle Hines is their guy. He's kind of an overseas basketball legend. He's normally just coaching and GMing that team, but he's now actually playing for the team. He's playing for Team Hines, his team this year. So he's a little bit old. Kind of Dan Dockage mentioned it during the broadcast. They got a lot of guys who are just kind of old. They're a very old head team. Justin Burrell, if you've watched the TBT, you know who that is. He plays for Team Hines. He's an overseas elite guy, overseas elite, you know, 4-time TBT champions, not in the tournament this year. But Justin Burrell has played for them before. He had 10-7 in their first matchup. So, you know, this is a team that, again, they're not going to score as much as Money Team. Money Team's going to score on you. They had 86 in their first one. But Team Hines is kind of like similar to Carmen's crew. They can get hot, but they're also going to just absolutely wear you down on defense. So, I think Team Hines will beat the money team personally. I think they'll play Team Hines, and I think that's going to be a fantastic matchup come Tuesday.
Yeah, I think one thing, this is my biggest takeaway with the tournament. It feels like every year the level of basketball just kind of gets a little bit better. I think the players are starting to take it, like, not to say they're not taking it seriously because it's $1 million, but from the first tournament on, I just feel like the competitive nature, you're starting to see these natural rivalry form. And then you're starting to see these guys, like, this is huge. And you're starting to get more talent. You're starting to see teams sort of become conglomerates in a way. You're starting to see players move around, which is creating also some level of rivalry in this. And I'm a little – like, Team Hines, I'm not worried about either team. I don't think worry is the right word, but I think these are going to be extremely competitive basketball games. I think Team Hines is – I'm going to turn this on immediately after we're done here, but I didn't catch Team Hines' first game. Any team that's defensively oriented is kind of always tough, especially in these one-off situations, because this might be a game where neither team can buy a bucket. Then it just comes down to a couple shots at the end. And that's always something you got to be worried about in these types of tournaments.
Yeah, and funny enough, Carmen Screw and Team Hines haven't faced each other, even though they've been there from the jump, both of them. I think Carmen Screw came in the second year. So 7 years for them, 8 for Team Hines. I believe they've been there the whole time. So, and I think going back to what you just said, maybe a good word is just credibility of this TBT. They're starting – it doesn't feel like just like – a summer basketball tournament. This feels like a professional tournament of professional guys. And I think last year, a couple of big names played, obviously Joe Johnson played, and that just lends to the credibility. You know, Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade were sitting courtside at the championship. That lends to his credibility. You know, when you have these big names that play in the NBA, that still play in the NBA, talking about it. I know LeBron has talked about it before. He talked about watching Carmen's Crew last year or 2 years ago when William Buford was the tournament MVP. So it just lends to its credibility. And, you know, it's nice to see Carmen's Crew. I was actually worried they wouldn't evolve with the tournament because they were fantastic, you know, in years past. But, you know, if you don't bring in new guys like they have, then you can get kind of ran over. And they did a great job of that. Their additions this year have been, I think, their best additions in the whole time they played.
Yeah, Mavunga and Keyshawn Woods have been huge for this team, as well as – who else they had? I'm blanking on it.
Kufis has played in the tournament. Kufis, he's played the TBT before, but not for Carmen Screw. He played 2 years ago. Forget who.
Yeah, Kufis was a late add as well, and he just kind of provides a different dimension offensively.
Yeah, I just kind of forgot how talented he was, honestly, because we only saw him for 1 year, and when he was here, I think I was 14, so I just kind of forget, honestly, how good Kosta Kufis was. And that year for Ohio State fans kind of goes under the radar because they didn't make the tournament. It was the year after the national championship loss, so it's kind of a weird year. People, I think, just kind of forget about him, but he's a fantastic talent. Yeah. You know, like you said, late addition for Caleb Wesson, who would have been a great talent in this tournament too. This tournament's kind of built for a guy like Caleb Wesson, but Kosta Kufis is kind of a bigger Caleb Wesson. He can do everything he does, so...
Yeah, I was surprised immediately. Like, his first game was sensational, and his talent's going to be something to behold in the next couple games, because if they play Team Hines, he's going to have some bigs where he's really going to have to body up against them and add some offensive offense to the game as well. So, Justin, moving on to the next game, when will we be able to see Carmen's Crew play next?
So, like you said, Team Hines is taking on Money Team right now. They will play that winner. So that kind of lends to, I think, it lends a little bit of advantage to them because they're going to play a little bit later. Then they'll have less time to turn around. And then the next time we will see Carmen's Crew is they will play in the Columbus final now. Yes, the Columbus final, because the winner will go to Dayton, because 8 teams go to Dayton. I keep forgetting that. It feels like 4 teams should go to Dayton, but 8 teams go to Dayton.
Yeah.
So eight teams go to Dayton, and they will play they will play at 9 o'clock on Tuesday against, either Money Team or Team Hines. So it'll be interesting to see. Category 5 will play the winner of Zip 'Em Up and Blue Collar U, and then Ohio, and then Carmen's Crew.
That'll be a good game as well.
Game that stands out to me. I'm just so frustrated with the TBT for seeding Blue Collar U so low, because I think they're a fantastic team. They almost really got me, though, because they had to come back against Nerd Team, which would have really killed that argument. But I think Zip 'Em Up is my team to watch. I think they're just a phenomenal team. I think they're built for this tournament. And I think now, with especially Redskier out, that will be the team Carmen's crew sees in Dayton if they were to get there. And that is going to be a very tough game.
Yeah, so looking forward to it for sure. I'm excited. Carmen's crew once again making an emphatic statement with their win today against the men of Mackey, 80-69. Where can we find you on social media, and where can we find you on Land Grant Holy Land, Justin?
You can find me. I write two pieces a week, and then our Your Nuts article with Connor Lamons every Friday. We also do a podcast every other week called Bucketheads. We get some great guests. We've already had Joey Lane on. We're really going to start to build that guest pool and start to bring in some great guests for basketball season. It'll be weekly when basketball season starts. And you can find me on Twitter at Justin_Golba.
Yep, thanks for coming on today, Justin. Let's close this thing out, guys. Next game, 9 p.m. Tuesday against the winner of the Money Team or Team Hines. Once again, this is your host, Christopher Ennie. You can find me recording the Buck Off podcast with Land Grant Holy Land, and you can find me on Twitter at ChrisRennieCFB. Don't forget to follow both of us. It's greatly appreciated. And thank you guys for coming for this edition of the Instant Recap Podcast of Land Grant Holy Land.